Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In his letters to a young poet, Rainer Maria Rilke addresses the issue of sadness, Traurigkeit in German. And in letter 8, he's responding to Mr. Kappes, his interlocutor, having told him that he went through a period of great or significant sadness and that he's gone through other periods as well. And he's writing to an interlocutor who clearly has episodes of, he says, uneasiness or misery or anxiety or depression. And the advice that he has to give us, I think, is incredibly relevant in our own time, just as much as it was in Rilke's own time, particularly since we inhabit a society which does not equip us well for understanding and dealing with our own emotions, particularly sadness. There's the same pressure in our own time to shove it down, to conceal it, to push it away, to try to forget it, to take all sorts of counterproductive attitudes towards it that are ultimately, Rilke would say, forms of cowardice that shrink our horizons, that cut us off from things. Sadness is not always a bad thing. As a matter of fact, according to Rilke, it can play an incredibly important role. As a matter of fact, it has an absolutely essential role in our growth, and it can be transformed into something greater than merely a feeling. So sadness, says, it's an important moment of tension, Spannung. And he describes it, this is the way he says, we feel as paralysis because we no longer hear our astonished emotions living. We are alone with the unfamiliar presence that has entered us. Everything we trust and are used to is for a moment taken away from us. We stand in the midst of a transition where we cannot remain standing. This actually sounds not only like sadness in the sense that we're used to, but also like existential anxiety, as other figures like Kierkegaard or Heidegger or Sartre have described it as well, with these sort of markers of everything being taken away. Rilke stresses that when sadness occurs, it's not simply because of loss. It's not simply because of frustration or deprivation. It's because something new has entered into us, and we're not quite sure what to make of it. So he says that there are moments when we are sad, when something new has entered us, something unknown. Our feelings grow mute in shy embarrassment. A silence arises, and in the new experience, which no one knows, stands in the midst of it all and says nothing. And you can think about the sadnesses that you feel, sometimes which overcome you. They surprise you. You could be watching something or listening to something, and suddenly you feel sad. And why is that? Well, something is happening within you. You may not be able to put your finger on it right away. He talks about this new presence within us. He says, the presence that has been added has entered our heart, gone into its innermost chamber, and is no longer even there. It's already in our bloodstream. It's become part of ourselves. We don't know what it was. And he says, we have changed. This is a beautiful metaphor. Like a house that a guest has entered changes. Like a house in which a new presence has come in, which alters the relations between everything else. And Rilke thinks that there's some mistakes that people make. One of them he talks about, he says, the only sadnesses that are actually dangerous and unhealthy are the ones that we carry around in public. Why? In order to drown them out with the noise. Like diseases that are treated superficially and foolishly, they withdraw and after a short interval break out again the more terribly and gather inside us. And our life, life that is unlived, rejected, lost, life, here another beautiful turn of phrase, life that we can die of. So they're a way in which our own affective, emotional states can be turned against us. We can't really get rid of sadness by going out to the bar and having some drinks with friends. Not a real sadness, not something that is within us. Maybe a superficial feeling blue you can, but going out to the mall and purchasing something, hanging out with your friends, watching endless shows on Netflix, whatever other recourse that you might have, hooking up with somebody and losing yourself in sex, the sadness will always come back. If it's there to begin with, it will always reemerge, as he says, like a disease that has been treated superficially and foolishly. And then it can become something bad for us. Another mistake he talks about, he says that one of the things that we've done in doing a lot of harm to life is rejecting what is presenting itself to us. He says, we must accept our reality as vastly as we possibly can. Everything, even the unprecedented, must be possible within us. This is the courage that's required of us, the courage to face the strangest, most unusual, most inexplicable experiences that can meet us. And one of those experiences for so many of us is sadness, a sadness that we don't understand, a sadness that comes upon us and we're not sure why it's there. We could just simply reject it, or we can take in a different attitude towards it. And he says, the fact that people have in this sense been cowardly has done infinite harm to life. They have ignored or suppressed or pushed away so many important things that are closely related to us, other people, even God. He goes on and he says, sadness can make us feel afraid, and we can feel a sense of uneasiness with it that leads to this sort of cowardice as well. And he tells us we don't really have to have these terrors. As a matter of fact, he's got this wonderful little passage here. He says, if we arrange our life in accordance with the principle that tells us we must always trust in the difficult, that is, to take on the sadness that is difficult to bear, what appears to us as the most alien will become our most intimate and trusted experience. How can we forget those ancient myths that stand at the beginning of all races? The myths about dragons that are at the last moment transformed into princesses. Perhaps all the dragons in our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us act just once with beauty and courage. Perhaps everything that frightens us is, in its deepest essence, something helpless that wants our love. And we can understand our sadness in the same way. Something helpless that wants not to be pushed away, hidden away, rejected, but wants us to take it on and love it. He also cautions against pathologizing sadness. He's talking to Kappas. He says, you mustn't be frightened if a sadness rises in front of you larger than any you have ever seen, if an anxiety like light and cloud shadows moves over your hands and over everything you do. You must realize that something is happening to you. Life has not forgotten you. It holds you in its hand and will not let you fall. Why do you want to shut out of your life any uneasiness, any misery, any depression? You don't know what these are doing inside of you. Why persecute yourself with the question of where all this is coming from and where it is going? He says, sickness is the means by which an organism frees itself of something. This is like a sickness. You must allow it to take its course and pay attention to it rather than trying to drug it up or find the causes and rip those out and deal with it in that way. Now, what does Rilke suggest in place of this? Taking on one's own fate, one's Schicksal in German. The fate that is, in fact, he says, within you, not something imposed on you from the outside, and allowing it its development, its Entwicklung, its unfolding in the German that he's writing in. Here he tells us that this is why it is so important to be solitary and attentive, to pay attention, aufmerken, when one is sad, Why? Because the seemingly uneventful and motionless moment when our future steps into us, the future, he says, is stepping inside of us. Our future is already within us. He says, the future steps into us is much closer to life than that other loud and accidental point of time when it happens to us from outside. So Rilke is saying that there's two points in time or moments or periods of time in which our future is manifesting itself to us. He says, the quieter we are, the more deeply and serenely the new presence can enter us, the more we can make it our own, the more it becomes our fate, our Schicksal. Then later when it happens, that is steps forth out of us to other people, it becomes public, we will feel related and close to it in our innermost being. And that is necessary. He says, other people get it wrong. They think that fate comes from the outside, but instead it actually emerges from us. He says, it's only because so many people have not absorbed and transformed their fates that were living in them that they have not realized what was emerging from them. It was so alien that in their confusion and fear, they thought it must have entered them at the very moment they became aware when it was actually there. And he says, the future stands still. We move in infinite space. So another possibility for us is to take on our sadness and realize that it is a moment where something has entered into us. We pay attention to it. We don't try to change it into something else. We watch it grow. We focus a little bit upon it, but we don't have to spend all of our time centered upon it. And we don't try to get rid of it, because if we do, we're going to miss the opportunity of transformation that our sadness and even, you know, he says depression, anxiety offers to us. Now, this is not to say that every single sadness should be indulged or anything like that, but we want to be thoughtful in how we approach our emotional states. We don't want to simply push away sadness. And if you read between the lines in this, what he's talking about is a way of becoming familiar with this emotion, this affective state that so many people are trying to push away or deny or repress or forget or ignore. They're not taking it on with solitude and attentiveness, to use Rilke's own terms. So he's counseling this young man about something that he could use. He's providing him with a new approach towards sadness that would allow him not simply to transform the sadness, but allow the sadness to transform himself. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.